Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Peter. Well, last week we talked with George Kircher about some of the first accessible ebooks and how that came to be, and how developing standards to make printed material accessible to the print disabled became implemented in the mainstream publishing community.
This week, we continue that conversation and learn why having uniform standards led to concerns about copyright and distribution, and how George has worked with others to resolve these issues. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is, more and more books are accessible. Now that standards developed for the print disabled have been incorporated into mainstream publishing, we have many more sources from which to obtain information, and we should take advantage of as many of those as possible.
So it used to be that accessible material was primarily done in audio or braille, and we had to get cassettes or even flexible discs way back when, and then we eventually got this material accessible through such services as the National Library Service in the United States, Bookshare around the world, Learning Ally, formerly Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, and print disabled people had to get their material from these specialty sources. Although those are still available to us these days, it turns out that because many of these standards were implemented by mainstream publishers, many of the ebooks that are now commercially available are also accessible to people who can't otherwise read printed material. So we can go to places like Amazon and other commercial vendors of books and read those books in addition to the sources where we've normally gotten those materials.
Let's have George reintroduce himself from last week, but it's shorter this week.
My name's George Kircher. I live in Missoula, Montana, and I'm blind.
As you may have heard in last week's show, George Kircher is the Senior Officer of Accessible Information at Learning Ally, Secretary General for the DAISY Consortium, very active in the Diagram Center, Chairperson of the Board of Directors for the Open eBook Forum, Chair of the Steering Council of the Web Accessibility Initiative, or WAI, and also on the board of the Institute of Museum and Library Services, or IMLS.
He is a very busy man and continues to be a tremendous advocate for the print disabled community and making information accessible.
And working to make that happen.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, success, success,
success, success. This week's focus topic is what happened once ebook standards were developed for the print disabled community and embraced by the wider community. This resulted in a quandary about who could have access to these books and how would they be distributed. This week, we'll hear how George has worked to resolve those issues and what lies ahead in the future.
So having common standards for the print disabled community and the mainstream publishing community seems like a great idea, but apparently some issues arose. Can you talk a little about that?
Sure. One of the big problems was that the files could be copied and moved anywhere because a digital copy was perfect. It's always perfect. With the analog cassettes, if you made a copy of an analog cassette and then another person made a copy, every time you make a copy, it degrades. But with a digital copy, it's perfect every time. And the publisher was saying, oh my gosh, somebody could put the file out there and all of a sudden everybody in the world would have it. So they were terrified at that time of piracy. And, of course, the music industry was in that stage where MP3, you know, people would rip CDs and have the MP3s go out there. So there was a lot of fear by the publishers of what was going to happen. And this is when the whole problem of digital rights management and encryption and protection hit the scene. And so while all these first generation digital books were really accessible, you'd wrap them up with DRM and then you couldn't play it on a reading system of your choice. And the disability community all of a sudden got shut out of this wonderful initiative to have the mainstream work with digital books.
So it sounds like all of these standards in accessibility and formats have had an incredible effect in the mainstream publishing industry. I guess everybody's books would be a lot different now if this work hadn't been started in the early 90s by RFBD and the DAISY Consortium.
Yeah, I think we've had a major impact. And what's interesting is, you know, you get into the legal side of things now, because these books are being born digital, where they're not converted from print and moved over to a digital version, and they're not just trying to replicate that book in print. Now the digital books that are coming out are being designed as digital products with all kinds of new cool features. And in the United States, the Department of Justice has sent out a Dear Colleague letter stating that if you're going to be buying digital content, both the content you buy and the reading systems you acquire at your campus or school, they have to be accessible. And it's taken a while for that to sink in the industry, but it's moving forward.
How well has the mainstream publishing industry accepted having to incorporate accessibility into their broader EPUB standards and products?
They're embracing it. We're seeing on these standards calls with the IDPF developing EPUB 3, and we're going to be working on EPUB 3.1 over the next year, that one of the primary things that people ask is, okay, how is this going to work for accessibility? And making sure that accessibility features are there in the standards. They're embracing it. And we've got our technical experts, our blind folks, and people that understand access technology really, really well right there. And now shoulder to shoulder, side by side with the publishing industry, they're helping to develop this technology in a way that's accessible. So it really has integrated into the mainstream, which is just great.
So what kind of issues, if any, still remain in terms of accessibility and making particularly books accessible?
The workflows that the publishers have and the tools that they have at their disposal are not built optimally for accessibility. The WYSIWYG editors and word processors and typesetting programs, Adobe Digital Editions is heavily used, and it will output EPUB 3, but you have to do a lot of finessing of it to really work well. So authoring tools are a barrier here. Also, with the new books that are coming out, they're not just, the novels are easy. You know, the novels have headings and paragraphs, and that's just about it. And we can make those accessible quite easily. But when you look at a textbook that's complex, it's got a layout to it that you want to make sure it looks good and at the same time works for accessibility. Then you've got the ability with HTML5. EPUB is all based on HTML5. And EPUB is an extension .epub. And if you rename that to .zip, you can unzip it and take a look at all the files in there. It's a zip container for web content. But you could do animations, you can do Canvas, you can do MathML, you can put in videos, and you can do interactive JavaScript. So all of this new technology is going to need to be accessible. The images, the books are so graphical in nature that trying to make sure that the information that's conveyed in this graphical content is also conveyed to a person with various disabilities. And so the standards work in that area to make sure we've got the technology that supports it is very important. You probably heard about the 3D printing craze that's happening right now. Well, oh my God, what a wonderful way to explain all kinds of things to people with disabilities. You know, you print out this molecule and you could feel that representation and have a description of how to explore this molecule. And you've got actually a 3D model there sitting in your hand that you could explore. You know, a human heart, you could print out. You could print out what a sphinx is, and you could feel the sphinx, even with the broken nose from the erosion. So you could feel all of that in detail. And rather than just getting only a description, which is what we've been able to get in the past, we can actually get our hands on it. So we have to make sure that all of those kinds of additional features are available to people with disabilities. And then, of course, we have to build the content that supports that kind of learning.
A few weeks ago, we did an episode of Eyes on Success, number 1537, about Benetech, the Diagram Center, and their work in generating 3D printed objects. Can you describe your involvement in that work?
Sure. I'm on the Diagram Project with that grant came to Benetech, and it's 5 years ago they got that funding. And during that five-year period, this 3D printing came into place and it moved into our work with the Diagram Project. And Daisy is one of the members of that. So the standards that were developed from that grant from the Department of Education are moving into Daisy and into EPUB. So it's very exciting. One of the things I really like with a 3D printer, you can do relief maps and feel the contours of mountains and lakes and things like that. What fun.
Can you talk a little bit about the Treaty of Marrakesh and the WIPO agreements to make some of this stuff more accessible to visually impaired and print disabled community around the world?
Sure. So I talked a long time ago about the tapes and how there was no standards. Once the DAISY standard became used worldwide, the libraries all had the books in the same format, easily moved across borders, but it's illegal to send a book because the copyright exception that most organizations work under in the United States is the Chafee exception. It's a United States law and does not extend past the border. And while we used to send tapes to Canada and nobody worried about it much, once everything went digital, people got worried about these products going across national borders because they could be duplicated. So once there were standards in place for the books, then the idea of an international treaty that would allow the cross-border exchange became more and more important. So the DAISY Consortium and the World Blind Union were leading that charge with the World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO, and introduced the first treaty. And I was there sitting next to Jim Fruchterman and James Gashel when that first copy was drafted and submitted to WIPO for consideration. It went through enormous rewrites. But the DAISY Consortium in the background was there supporting it in each individual country. The World Blind Union really did a great job, played a fabulous leadership role there. But I think it started by having the standards available that would allow, you know, you could take a book produced in any country in the DAISY format, move it to another country, and it would work on the standardized players.
What's the current status of the treaty?
I think 9 countries have ratified the treaty, and once 20 countries have ratified it, it will become official, and countries will be able to start using it. So any of those countries that have ratified it would then you'd be able to move those books across the national border.
And which countries are expected to participate in the treaty?
You know, in the English-speaking countries, it would be legal to move something from RNIB to the United States or to Australia or New Zealand, India. Many people speak English there. Spain and sharing books with Latin America, that's going to be very important. French, of course, French language books, and then Portuguese. And it'll become important to people who immigrated from one country to another and would like to read in their language that they were raised in.
So this essentially solves the copyright barriers that were put up so that visually impaired people can now share materials across these international borders.
Yeah, the organizations representing those countries, and there's going to have to be some restrictions, and it's not going to be just files flying around. It needs to be done in a way that assures that it's really people with disabilities getting these materials, because the books now are such high quality that they're just as good for sighted people as they are for people with disabilities.
So nowadays it seems that we can go to our traditional sources of accessible media, and we also have access to mainstream publishers which are producing accessible material for print-disabled people. How does this all work together?
You've got the publishers that are starting to publish in accessible format, and they're accessible right out of the box, board accessible, as we're saying, and we're going to have to pick and choose the titles that are produced by organizations serving people with disabilities. So it's going to be very interesting to see how all this evolves. You could go right now to the iBookstore, buy a book, and start reading it on your iPhone or iPad with voiceover right out of the box, probably.
Do you envision a day where most or all books are born accessible and there won't be a need for specialized places like the National Library Service, Bookshare, etc.?
That's a very interesting question. I think that there's a lot of information in books, especially the highly graphical content, that's going to need enhancements. So, you know, we talked about like a 3D printer model along with a description that could be an enhancement that could be added to a book. And we were on a call today with W3C and the publishing industry about this exact thing. How could publishers put enhancements into a title that's designed for people with disabilities or for people who just need a little bit more information about this visual presentation, and how could we link to that? And in addition, in W3C, there's open annotations, and it would be possible, we do think in the future, and it's standards work we're working on right now, to annotate a book.
And how would that work?
Let's say, for example, there's a textbook, it's accessible out of the box, and there's alt text for the images, but there's some very informative graphical content that the publisher has not done more than made the alt text there. It would be possible to annotate with descriptions of what this information is. In this annotation, you could perhaps provide a tactile graphic that you could print out, or a 3D printer model. And you could go through that textbook and annotate it and add value to that title to make it fully accessible. And boy, with the different types of disabilities, you've got people that are dyslexic, people with learning disabilities, blind people, low vision. You could put a lot of work into providing these kinds of enhancements to a book. So there's plenty of work for these organizations to do.
What do you think about the future use or need for human narration?
The human narration of these books is really great. Of course, now commercially, a lot of these are available, and you get books from NLS right now, and you know it really is the commercial version that they've just moved over into the DAISY format and are distributing, which is great. It's a great relationship with the publishing industry.
Oh, I think that's great. There's a lot more material quickly available from NLS these days on account of that partnership.
That's right. That's right. And wonderful, wonderful stuff. But boy, making information accessible, you know, we're going to get more and more right out of the box. But when you're really studying something and getting down into the depths of it, you know, as a student would, I think there's plenty of opportunities for continuing to work. The business models, I don't think too many organizations have figured out yet. How are we going to want to do this and scale it? But it's something that many of the organizations that I'm aware of within DAISY are trying to figure that exact thing out.
So there's always more work to do.
Yeah, absolutely correct. But following the technology and using the technology in new and creative ways, I think we can continue to raise the bar higher and higher and higher.
We've talked a lot about making standards for electronic formats to make these books accessible. But I guess we also have to be concerned about the hardware devices used to play this accessible material. What can you say about that?
One of the things that we're doing is we're trying to make sure that the different reading systems in the mainstream are accessible. And we've developed a testing system for these reading systems. And we're trying to identify the ones that are fabulously accessible, and we're making great progress on that. But some of the DAISY players that are on the market today are just drop-dead easy to use. They're just great. And we're trying to make sure that the mainstream reading experience is as good as what we've had in DAISY.
Let me tell you, I've been really enjoying all of these new navigational options in my EPUB books, but in my audiobooks, I still don't have any of them. And, you know, I listened to Pete talk about how awesome it is that he can use all of these navigational features, and I wish I could. So wouldn't it be nice to have the same features available to everybody?
It's certainly an area that we're working on.
There's no reason we shouldn't be able to make it as easy for Nancy to read a book as it is for me, right?
Well, the reading systems, there's so many out there. There's like 81 that we've tested right now.
Wow.
In the commercial field, just trying to make sure they all will work with the assistive technology. And not just screen readers, but you've got the different magnification programs, then you've got alternative navigation methods for people with orthopedic disabilities, and just trying to get everything working together is a challenge, but people are committed to doing it, and stay tuned. Boy, we're going to get this done. The commercial industry, there's a lot of books that are accessible right out of the box right now.
What do you think individuals can do to foster the development of more and more accessible materials?
Maybe one of the things that in the blindness community, I don't know if it's still true, I think it's beginning to go away, the idea of not purchasing titles, only getting them when they're free from the Library of Congress or something. I think we as a group need to get away from that mindset and start to buy books. Of course, use the library. Libraries are great. But also starting to support the publishing industry by purchasing titles. I think that's something that maybe is a mindset that needs to change a little bit.
Well, and that's a great point, because much as we all like to get things for free in order to get these new features implemented, it's going to cost the publishers something to do that. And so if we all make contributions in our own way to that, that will help facilitate this work. Now for this week's final item, how to contact George, how to learn more about him and his work, and some of his thoughts about what he'd like to see in the future. if people want to contact you directly, is that okay? And if so, how would you recommend that?
Sure. Kercher@montana.com. That's Kercher@montana.com.
And what's the URL for your website?
You could go to Kercher.montana.com.
Where would you like to see reading go in the future?
Libraries. Oh my God, you've got all this initiative about digital books and EPUB and the libraries certainly changing reading. You know, I was placed there to help advise on how can we evolve mainstream libraries to be accessible. People who have disability, blind or other types of print disabilities have been sequestered off, you know, in a separate, you know, dealt with by a separate group, not been involved with the library. And boy, it's a great opportunity to have people with disabilities right there in the mainstream with everybody else, going, you know, to the same book clubs, learning about the technology and the libraries in the same way that other people do. It's just integration of people with disabilities into society in a more effective way. So I think libraries have a real important role to play. And of course, we're all in a situation where lifelong learning has to take place. And libraries are a great place for that education to continue.
And if you'd like to contact George Kercher or find his website or go to some of the other resources we talked about in the show, that will all be in the show notes that are associated with this show at www.eyesonsuccess.net. And we'll also have links to some of the prior episodes where we talked about 3D printing at Benetech. And if you use our search feature and put in the word pioneer, you'll find shows that we did with Jim Fruchterman and Jim Gashel, whom George also referenced. And you'll also find lots of interviews we've done with other pioneers in the field of assistive technology.
That's it for show 1540. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about traveling and living and working abroad. We'll be speaking with Elizabeth Sammons, whose varied experiences have included a stint with the Peace Corps and serving as a multilingual guide. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.